Now I am speaking as if I am sitting in Congress and ask the legislators in regard to our land.
For the first time in history, large numbers of Alaska Native peoples in all parts of Alaska spoke out to regain control of the basics of life in the Alaskan bush. Canadian Judge Thomas Berger spent 2 years listening and now recommends a complete overhaul of ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. Those recommendations are now revealed for the first time in this program.
Funding for this program is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum.
The main concerns of Alaska Natives are land, self-government, and subsistence. These concerns are linked. Taken together, they are the means by which the Native people seek to regain control over their land, their communities, and their lives.
An international organization of Eskimos called the Inuit Circumpolar Conference hired Judge Berger to take charge of a wide-ranging inquiry.
What the ICC is establishing is a commission that would ordinarily be carried out under government auspices. This has far-reaching implications. Arctic peoples living under three national flags have set up their own commission to review what has happened in Alaska and to consider its significance not just for the native people of Alaska, but for the native people of the circumpolar community. It is a venture that will be watched closely.
The World Council of Indigenous People joined the Inuit Circumpolar Conference to sponsor Berger's independent inquiry. ICC President Hans Pavia Rosing.
In order for the final report of the commission to be perceived as being significant in Alaska and elsewhere, it is important that Honorable Thomas Berger is allowed to carry out his work without the possibility of him being pressured by anyone, including, of course, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. The success of the commission will depend on its perceived integrity.
The commission has been asked to consider the impact of ANCSA in its broadest sense.
Judge Thomas Berger.
The functions of the Native corporations established by ANCSA, the social, cultural, economic, political, and environmental impact of ANCSA, and the significance of ANCSA to Indigenous peoples around the world.
Berger had done a similar inquiry in Canada's Northern Territories for the Government of Canada, called the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline Inquiry. His recommendations halted the duration of a trans-Arctic gas pipeline, led to the establishment of game reserves, and created awareness of the rights of Native peoples. Berger fought for Native rights as a lawyer and helped make sure Canada's Native peoples were recognized in the new national constitution. In this inquiry, Berger had to deal with an American law, the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. That Claims Act divided about 10% of Alaska among more than 200 Native corporations. Those corporations, created by the Claims Act itself, shared nearly $1 billion as payment for dropping claims to the remainder of Alaska. It was hoped in 1971 that Native corporations would hold lands, make a profit, and help Alaska Natives enter the American corporate mainstream. But there were no guarantees that the corporations would succeed or hold the land. Harvey Samuelson of Dillingham.
I know that Native land claims, it wasn't perfect in 1971 since we signed it, but that was the best we could compromise at that time with Congress and with the Senators, Congress, State of Alaska, and us. We knew it wasn't perfect.
After the Claims Act was passed in 1971, it was hailed as a new constructive way to settle with Native peoples. News about the settlement spurred many peoples around the world to seek settlements, but ANCSA's corporate system of holding lands was not copied. Only Alaska Natives born before 1971 got shares in the ANCSA corporations. There was a 20-year moratorium on the sale of those shares, and with just 6 years left, Native people are aware that the lands they hoped to save are clearly at risk. Unless ANCSA is changed, lands can be lost through corporate takeover, taxation, bankruptcy, or even voluntary sale. These pitfalls were not in people's minds when they found out the details in 1972 and 1973. Jackie Sunnyboy was hired to explain the Claims Act to people living in interior Alaska. She talked to Judge Berger about those days when he stopped at a Yukon River fish camp.
There were chiefs at the villages, there were councils at the villages, but they were not given the proper information as to what the meanings of corporations were, what it would mean to be a stockholder. Many of the elders who made the decisions for the villages were not able to understand because they had a very difficult time just understanding the language itself, let alone what was written in the pamphlets. They had no idea what questions to ask at that point. Many of the people just told them that they were to sign here on the dotted line, didn't tell them what they were signing and what this would mean to them and their children later on.
Most people anticipated their lands would be safe and they would get some money too.
I'm Gladys Earhart. All I was told to us that we were going to get money and land. I just don't get anything out of it.
Few of the corporations today are successful. Few pay dividends. In most cases, land is a major corporate asset. Berger believes the lands must be removed from corporate jeopardy so that Alaska Natives can exercise maximum control over the lands they own.
The Natives who testified at the hearings I held throughout Alaska want to sever Native lands from the ANCSA corporations. Many of them want to retribalize their lands by transferring them to tribal governments. In this desire, they perceive an answer that is logical not only in their eyes, but also in the eyes of the law. If a corporation keeps the land, it will not remain in Native hands.
One village corporation has already filed for bankruptcy. Haida Indian lands may be lost to creditors. Other corporations are in financial trouble. Even those corporations who do well financially will become attractive takeover targets in 1991, when shares can be sold on the open market. Berger urges Native shareholders to act promptly to transfer corporate lands to the tribe.
In the villages, the matter is one of urgency, and it should be done at once.
There is a special reason for this recommendation.
Alaska Natives require a form of land holding that reflects their own cultural imperatives and ensures that ancestral lands will remain in their possession under their own governance. The road to the retribalization of Native land is plain, its implication clear. This way there is a legal path, not a legal thicket. Chaos will result if shares in the village corporations are to be sold, unless the corporations turn the land over to the tribe first.
Tribal governments have existed in Alaska for thousands of years. The United States has recognized those tribal governments since 1867, when Alaska became a U.S. territory. Whether it is a traditional government or an IRA government organized under the 1934 Indian Reorganization Act, tribal governments continue to be recognized today by the United States government. Native governments can hold lands and also act as local governments. If the land is held by a tribal government, the land cannot be taken for bad debts or taxes. There is no threat of corporate takeover. It is like other governments that do not lose their land to anyone, even though they may be broke or operating on a deficit.
I recommend that the shareholders of village corporations who are concerned that their land may be lost should transfer their land to tribal governments to keep the land in native ownership.
Tribal governments can manage land and pass laws to regulate activities, including subsistence. At least 7 states delegate some of their political functions to tribal governments, and 3 other states have signed a policy of government-to-government relations with the Navajo Nation. The tribal government can also serve as a conduit for state-funded services to non-natives, even though the non-natives cannot be members of the tribes.
Governments established in all of Alaska's native villages should assert their native sovereignty. Ping and future applications by villages in Alaska for tribal constitutions and charters under the Federal Indian Reorganization Act should be granted. The state of Alaska should recognize tribal governments as appropriate local governments for all purposes under state law. These measures, important for native self-rule, may entail the dissolution of some, but not all, of the state-chartered local governments in native villages.
The state of Alaska has refused to recognize tribal governments for most purposes. In some instances, where there is no state-chartered government in a village, the state will interact to a limited degree with the existing tribal government. In most villages, there are 2 local governments, one state-chartered and one tribal. There are frequently problems in these cases. Sheila Agathario of Larson Bay on Kodiak Island.
Another problem that has come up is this business of dual governments, with the state of Alaska not recognizing the rights for tribes to govern themselves in their own territory. So we have native villages governed by 2 governments, a native and a city. And it comes down to who is the governing body in that community.
In addition to municipal and tribal governments, there are profit and non-profit corporations, fish and game boards, and school boards. There are hardly enough people in the villages to fill the various bureaucratic roles. As a practical matter, some villages are disbanding their state-chartered local governments and turning the bulk of powers over to a single tribal government. The United States has recognized a special government-to-government relationship with Native peoples as part of the American political system.
Many Americans believe that to claim rights for tribes or classes, groups or collectivities runs against the American individualist tradition. They consider that the protection of individual rights is the most effective way to secure such interests. Legal and constitutional means to protect these rights for minorities in the United States are expressed in laws to prevent discrimination on the basis of race, nationality, or color, and in laws to protect the free exercise of religion. Now, although Native Americans from time to time claim the benefit of these laws, their central concerns do not fall within these categories. Native rights rest on a fundamentally different footing from the claims of black Americans and immigrant minorities. Their attempts to preserve, on their own terms and for their own purposes, a land-based culture and way of life mark Native Americans off from other minorities. No other group can assert a right to a land base and to distinct political institutions founded on the recognition of Native sovereignty.
The U.S. Constitution, laws, and policies of the past have guaranteed Native peoples a special political relationship no other citizens of this country can claim. Those principles are reinforced today. In January of 1983, President Reagan announced in writing the following policy. This administration intends to restore tribal governments to their rightful place among the governments of this nation, and to enable tribal governments, along with state and local governments, to resume control over their own affairs. The lands where tribal governments have control over their own affairs is widely known as Indian Country. There is considerable debate about whether or not there is Indian Country in Alaska, and Berger suggests this solution.
I urge that all land subject to the jurisdiction of native governments should be described as Indian Country, or, as the case may be, Eskimo Country or Aleut Country.
That would clarify tribal jurisdiction over native lands. The tribal government could lease or even sell lands to corporations. Those lands could then be set aside for development. Few village corporations are now in a position to develop commercially, even though they should receive more than half the lands in the Claims Act.
In most cases, it seems likely that, without their land, the village corporations will be dissolved. If a village corporation is already engaged in profitable activities based on land development, the land, after it is transferred to the tribal government, can be leased back to the corporation for business purposes. Because my recommendations relate only to the land, they would leave the village corporations with all of their other business assets. If a village corporation has a thriving business or investments, nothing I have said would impair the corporation's right to continue to carry on its business, to make a profit, and to pay dividends to its shareholders.
Five villages decided to keep lands and not participate in the cash part of ANCSA. The village of Vinitai went one step further. All the corporation shareholders turned their shares over to the tribal government. Other villages want this option. The Klukwan Village Corporation transferred 893 acres of land from a former reserve to the Klukwan IRA government. Although this transfer has taken place, provisions for transfer of corporation land to an IRA government are not now a part of the Act. Berger proposes several options for the large regional corporations created by ANCSA.
First, they should consider transferring these lands to the villages to ensure unified village control of the greatest possible acreage. Second, the regional corporations should consider transferring these lands to regional tribal governments, perhaps in conjunction with the transfer of village corporation lands to village tribal governments.
Berger points out that corporations exist based on profit and loss, while tribes exist because they are endlessly renewed by new generations. The original shareholders in ANCSA corporations were all born before the law was passed in 1901. Now there are families with children who are shareholders and some who are not.
On this people born after 1971,
Mike Albert of Tanuna,
which are today called New Natives. To us, these people are not new natives. They're just like all of us, you know. They're no different than ours. They are our own children. People born after 71 cannot have shares, cannot have land, cannot have stock. So as the way I see it is, the way they are settled today is like those children don't even belong to us. Those children don't even exist like natives. They exist like non-natives because they have no right to vote. They have no right for anything because of this act.
Even shares passed through inheritance will diminish with numbers and become unequal depending on the size of the family. Berger's plan would return all native peoples to equal footing.
Land should be turned over to tribal governments on the condition that they admit to membership all of their original shareholders in the village corporation. Tribal governments have the power to determine their own membership, and natives born after 1971 should be members of the tribe. This arrangement accommodates the children born after 1971. They should be included in the tribe by virtue of their being born into it.
corporate and political realities must be dealt with in any proposed changes. And since the ANCSA corporations are chartered by the state of Alaska, that too must be dealt with.
Since the land is now a corporate asset, the scope of possible recommendations is limited. It is not possible to simply pass a law transferring the land from native corporations to tribal governments. The land is, under the law, private property belonging to the corporations. My recommendations are, therefore, addressed to the native shareholders in the corporations. Congress should pass legislation to facilitate the transfer of land by the village corporations to tribal governments without regard for dissenters' rights.
Dissenters' rights refers to the corporate term where those who disagree with the majority decision can be bought out for the face value of their shares. Since no stock will be on the market until 1991, it is nearly impossible to determine the value of shares. The corporations created an artificial wealth from land that previously could not be bought, sold, or owned in the commercial real estates. Corporation stock cannot be sold until 1991. Since no one has yet made any money from selling that stock, no one would lose any money by eliminating the dissenters' rights. Moreover, while the stock is still restricted, it is still possible for Congress to adjust the terms of the settlement. Berger also deals with a subsistence way of life, recommending that the tribal government which owns the land also call the shots. The way things are now,
native peoples already have the exclusive right to take fish and wildlife resources on native-owned lands and water, subject to state jurisdiction. This means that although they are the only ones who can fish, hunt, trap, and gather on the 10% of Alaska that they own, the state tells them when, what, and how much they can harvest.
State regulations would be eliminated from native-owned lands.
I recommend that tribal governments should have exclusive jurisdiction over fish and wildlife on native lands, whether owned by native corporations or by tribal governments. There, they should manage the resources themselves. Finally, the regional corporations should consider assigning subsistence easements to village or regional tribal governments. Regional corporations would then continue to own the lands, but use of the lands would be restricted to subsistence purposes.
Regulations that interfere with subsistence would be dropped, and Congress would have to take action to protect subsistence resources under the Berger Plan.
Rights of access on state and federal lands and waters and a share of the resources fully sufficient for native subsistence must be guaranteed. Shared jurisdiction with the state and federal governments should be exercised so that native hunting and fishing rights are not regulated except for conservation purposes. The health and abundance of fish and wildlife depend on the quality of the environment throughout their range. Many species will migrate beyond native-owned lands or lands used for native subsistence within the state and federal domain. To ensure a continuing supply of subsistence resources for Alaska Natives, Congress must, I think, clearly establish a policy of protection for migratory species and provide for native participation in the oversight of that protection.
Berger proposes that Alaska Natives become partners with the state and federal governments in managing the wildlife on non-native lands.
Native lands comprise only 10% of the state and are inadequate for native subsistence. Native people must have guaranteed access to their other fishing, hunting, trapping, and gathering areas on state and federal lands. Also, in partnership with state and federal authorities, they should have jurisdiction over fish and wildlife in those areas. The members of Alaska Native tribes ought to have exclusive hunting and fishing rights and jurisdiction over native lands and waters, and shared rights and jurisdiction over state and federal lands and waters.
The 70,000 Eskimos, Inuits, and Aleuts make up roughly one-seventh of Alaska's population, and nearly 10,000 Alaska Natives live elsewhere in the United States. Will the non-native majority population go along with Berger's recommendations, which support tribal governments with extended control over land management and subsistence? Berger answers that with a question of his own.
Is America willing to acknowledge the persistence of native culture and native values in Alaska, the legitimacy of distinct modes of native land holding and native governance, as essential expressions of native culture and values? Does America's cultural pluralism extend to all of its indigenous peoples? These questions underlie the riddles of ANCSA, and they will not go away. The stand that Alaskans and other Americans adopt will be based on their own deepest convictions about their nation.
Berger's recommendations have just been unveiled. His report will surely prompt comment from state and federal governments, from village and regional corporations, from urban and bush residents, and international organizations. Berger hopes his report will be used as a basis for constructive change.
I hope I've done something useful for the people of Alaska, the native people and the non-native people, to enable them to build a true partnership in the state of Alaska. If I have been able to set down on paper in Village Journey the things that were on the minds of Alaska Natives, land, subsistence, self-government, the family, the future. If I've been able to write for the native people of Alaska a report, and if they can say of that report, this guy came here, he listened to what we had to say, he wrote it all down, and he got it right. And if they can take that report to decision makers in Juneau, take that report to decision makers in Washington, in the administration, and in Congress, and say, look, this is a book that tells you what it is that concerns us and what we want to do about it, then I will be pleased. That is what I conceived my job to be, and that's what I tried to do.
Berger's report is entitled Village Journey, published by Hill and Wang of New York. Portions of the book in this program were used with permission. This is Adeline Raybaugh.
This program was produced by Western Media Concepts, which is solely responsible for its content. Producer was Jim Sykes, writer Jeff Berliner, and editor Sue Burris. For more information about this and other programs in this series, write to Western Media Concepts, Post Office Box 215, Anchorage, Alaska, 99510. Funding for this program is provided by the Alaska Humanities Forum.